It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and let's have a conversation. Thank you to each and every one of you for listening. Each of you are treasured, you're valued. Today, strive for excellence, take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And I always like to say thank you to this great team that I get to work with, and that is producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie for all their support and good work, and all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com, and you can find all recaps and podcasts of the shows there. Just click on the picture, and that will bring up the recap and the podcast. And sign up for my weekly email newsletter as well. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests and our most recent Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcasts and most recent op-eds. Last week, I had a great conversation with Dr. Victor Davis Hanson from the Hoover Institute at Stanford regarding cancel culture and Trumpism, and that is on the website, so be sure and check that out. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to each of you that contribute to support our independent voice and exercising our right of freedom of speech. Be sure and check out America's Veteran Stories with Kim Munson on Sunday afternoons, 3 to 4 p.m. on KLZ 560 AM and KLZ 100.7 FM. This week, we will be continuing our series on Echoes of Our War with Marine Vietnam veterans Grady Birdsong and Bob Averill, and also Paula Sarles, Vietnam-era Marine veteran and Gold Star wife, joins us as well to let us know what's going on with the remodel of the Marine Memorial out here in Golden. And it is Wednesday, and that means it is Wednesday at Hooters Restaurants. So for to-go or dine-in, you buy 20 wings, you get 10 for free. Love those Hooters wings whenever the girls come over. I normally get the smoked wings these days. They are half the calories, and they have all kinds of different flavors, Texas barbecue, lemon rub, habanero, and there's five locations: Lone Tree, Westminster, Aurora, Colorado Springs, and Loveland. More information on that, go to my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com, and click on the sponsors tab. You'll see all of my great sponsors there, and then of course the Hooters icon, and that they will have all of the specials there as well. And one other thing that we are recommending a to-do is we want to get Reggie Carr, the founder of I'm a Trumpster, in a meeting with Donald Trump. So write Donald Trump, care of Mar-a-Lago Club, 1100 South Ocean Boulevard, Palm Beach, Florida, 33480. We're going to ask that you do this by the end of the week. And just send Donald Trump a note, encourage him to meet Reggie Carr. Reggie would really like to work with him to push forward our conservative message that these ideas that all men are created equal with these rights from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness is worth conserving. And Reggie has realized that the Democrat message of divisiveness and destruction and dependency has been very detrimental to the Black community, and we want to change that. So I would encourage you that you would actually write Donald Trump and then email me and let me know that you've done that. We're going to put your name in a drawing, and the persons whose name is drawn will actually get to come in and co-host the show. We've got a big show planned for you today. We'll be talking with Priscilla Ron. She is a candidate for Colorado Vice GOP chair, and she'll be letting us know why she should be the next vice chair for the Colorado Republican Party. And we'll be talking with Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, and then Ben Martin. This is our show where we will be focusing on the Revolutionary War. This show is brought to you by the Harris family and greatly appreciate their partnership on that. And of course, we'll talk with Jason McBride as well. You know that we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something is a good idea, we should not have to use force to implement it. Our quote for today, I go to Henry Knox, because we're going to be talking about an amazing story from the Revolutionary War, how he brought a whole bunch of cannons from Ticonderoga down to the Boston area. And I thought he would be a great person to quote today. And he was a military officer of the Continental Army and later the United States Army. And he also served as the first United States Secretary of War from 1789 to 1794. He was born and raised in Boston, and he owned and operated a bookstore there, cultivating an interest in military history and joining a local artillery company. He was born in 1750. He died in 1806. And this is what he said: "The eyes of all America are upon us. As we play our part, posterity will bless or curse us." I think that's very appropriate for what's going on today in America as well. And before we get to Priscilla, Ron, I did want to just lowlight one of the pieces of legislation out there. Our bill of the day has Democrat sponsors, both in the Senate and in the House of Representatives, and Senators Winter and Pedersen in the Senate, and Representatives Lantine and Gray over in the House. And it's called the Protecting Opportunities and Workers' Rights Act. And it's concerning discriminatory employment practices. And my friends, what this will do is basically any employee can bring a suit in any court of competent jurisdiction in the county or district where the alleged discriminatory or unfair employment practice occurred. And they can bring that. It allows an individual to file a civil action without otherwise exhausting administrative proceedings and remedies, due process, as long as the individual either files a charge with the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, bureaucratic commission, or serves a written demand for the relief on the individual's employer and allows the employer 14 days to respond. Ultimately, what this will do is an employee can file suit, of which an employer will have to lawyer up to fight the suit, which is very, very expensive. And this actually will put a big division between employers and employees. I think it's going to make it more difficult for small businesses in Colorado. So it's yet another nail, if you will, on small business and businesses here in Colorado. And I would recommend that you take a read on this. Again, that is Senate Bill 21-176, but basically it gets rid of due process. It makes it easier for a small business person or any business person to be sued, cost a significant amount of money, and once again, another attack on small business here in Colorado. And I think it's just really important you understand what's happening down at the State House. All these things are very bad for the state. And so we have a lot of work to do. And one of those people that has stepped up to the plate is Priscilla Ron. She has thrown her hat in the ring for Colorado State GOP Vice Chair. Priscilla Ron, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kim. It's nice to be here.
So this election is coming up this Saturday. And what is on your mind? Why should people vote for you and make you the next vice chair of the Colorado Republican Party?
So we are living in a time right now where we absolutely need to unify our party to strengthen it and to get Republicans elected. That's a major, major goal of the Republican committee here in Colorado, that we ensure that our conservative voices are heard, that we support amazing Republican candidates all the way down the ballot in all different offices in 64 counties. And it's just going to take all hands on deck to bring us together so that we can have a winning result in 2022.
Priscilla Ron, I always hear that we need to get Republicans elected. However, I have seen personal experience, people that say they are Republicans, but actually have been pushing forward higher taxes, bigger government, a progressive agenda. And so I question just getting Republicans elected. I want to get people elected that want to conserve our American idea that all men are created equal with these rights from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And that's a difficult thing as a vice chair, because it's difficult to do that litmus test. What's your thoughts on that, Priscilla?
You make a great argument to that we need to make sure that conservatives who are also registered Republicans are standing up for our values. Because I like to say I'm more than a conservative, I'm more than a Republican, I'm a Frederick Douglass Republican, and that I stand for the life-empowering values of Frederick Douglass. And to your argument, what does that look like? Respect for the Constitution, respect for life, belief in the limited power of government, school choice, right to bear arms, immigration, women's rights, economic prosperity, and free speech. We're seeing a lot of attacks on those values. So you're right, they should go hand in hand. They don't always. So it's going to be up to us to make sure we're having those conversations with candidates to say, if you want our vote, then we're going to expect that you're going to stand for these values.
I think that's very important. And one other thing, Priscilla Ron, that is I've been very concerned about with this last election, and that is election integrity. We need to make sure that we have free and fair elections. How will you address that?
Absolutely. I think one of the strategies we need to take a look at is making sure we support conservative Republican clerk and county recorders in each county, because we know that that's a very powerful position to be in, where we can have those conversations about making sure we clean up the voter rolls, that there's one vote per person, that we have signature verification to bring.
And that they're alive, right?
And that they're alive.
That they're alive.
I mean, I was a candidate last year. And I can't tell you how challenging it is to have a software list that has four different names with four different party affiliations, and you don't know who's going to answer the door. So even the data that we have access to is not up to date. And I think one of the ways that we can make a big impact is to ensure that we have great clerk and recorders that are going to uphold the Constitution. We take a look at what's happened in six other states where they're state secretaries, you know, violated the Constitution. We can't allow that to happen in Colorado. And so we can definitely put pressure on our Secretary of State to make sure that everything is by the book and is constitutional.
And Priscilla, how can people get more information about you?
You can reach me at PriscillaRon.com. That's my website. Or you can email me at Priscilla, PRISCILLA, at Priscilla Ron, that's RAHN.com.
Well, Priscilla Ron, thank you so much for joining us, and good luck.
Thank you so much, Kim.
And one of my great partners is on the line with me, and it's because of these great sponsorship partners that we are on the airways, this independent freedom of speech voice out there. And that sponsor is Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group. Lauren, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kim. How are you doing today?
I am good. And Lauren Levy, we are focusing on the Revolutionary War with Ben Martin. We'll be talking with him in segments 2, 3, and 4. He is a military historian, a patriotic historian, a former Army Ranger, a West Point graduate. And we'll be talking about different things that happened in the Boston area. And you are a Boston kid, correct?
I am.
And what's your thoughts on all of the history around Boston?
You know, it's interesting you ask. I lived there till I was 21, and it's kind of when you live somewhere, you don't really understand where you live, kind of. It wasn't until I left that I realized how new things were here in Denver, comparatively speaking. And now when I go back, it's kind of interesting to just take it all in and take my family on, you know, the Red Line Walk and all the historical sites to see there. And you realize just how old some of these buildings are and how there's no rhyme or reason to where roads go because they just have to wrap around these buildings. It's kind of interesting to go back there and see it all.
Well, and our history, our revolutionary history, is so important. And people on an individual basis are so interested in their own ancestry. But we've seen kind of this attack on our history. And that is why we do this particular show. And Lauren Levy, you are a great partner for both the Kim Munson Show and America's Veteran Stories with Kim Munson. And I really appreciate that. So when people are thinking about wanting to get pre-qualified, which I think is really important in this spring selling market with their mortgage or refinancing or a reverse mortgage, you are the person to talk to. How can people reach you?
The best way is just call our office at 303-880-8881, 303-880-8881. And, you know, rates are hanging in there. They're still on the lower end. They've gone up a bit, but not too bad. So it's still a good opportunity for people.
And getting pre-qualified is the thing to do right now if people want to get into this real estate market here in Denver right now.
Absolutely. Realtors will tell you you can't even go out looking without being pre-qualified for probably more than the homes you want to see just because of the bidding wars that are going on. So if you're out there without even being qualified, no one's going to accept an offer from you. So it's extremely important that gets done ahead of time.
And it's painless if they give you a call to do that, Lauren Levy, correct?
That's right. It's free of charge, and it only takes about 15 minutes, and I can have them on their way.
And that phone number again for Lauren is 303-880-8881, 303-880-8881. Lauren, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Thank you so much, Kim.
And we'll be right back with Ben Martin.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to each and every one of you who are supporting the show and keeping our independent voice out there. I greatly appreciate that as well. This is such an important show. It's our ancestry show, our history show. It's brought to you by the Harris family. So appreciate their partnership on that. And Ben Martin is on the line with me. You know him. He is a patriotic historian, a former Army Ranger, a West Point graduate, and we are going through the Revolutionary War, which is, I think, so important that we understand our history. Ben Martin, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be with you, Kim. How are you today?
I am well and very excited. Great. About this next series. So where shall we start, Ben Martin?
Well, we're going to kind of go back to last time just to lead us into this time, okay? But today we're going to be talking about the campaign of Boston, or the Boston campaign, the second part of it. And so we're going to start with the Siege of Boston. We're going to go to the Battle of Bunker Breed Hills, and then we're going to go to Knox and the cannon from Ticonderoga. Very interesting part. All of this is interesting. And then we'll end with the Dorchester Heights and the British evacuation. So if you're ready to start, I'm ready to start. So I'll just say, Kim, that today we begin that second discussion of the Boston campaign. And remember last month when we left off our presentation, the British Army had just completed their long struggle fighting their way back into Boston after they had attempted to capture John Hancock and Samuel Adams at Lexington and then confiscate the Patriot arms and ammunition that was supposedly hidden at Concord. And
okay,
I
wanted to mention something on that, because history seems to be repeating itself, because I have heard we've seen this assault on our Second Amendment rights, the rights to protect ourselves with firearms. And I
Correct.
Was talking to someone and they had mentioned that it looks like there may be an onerous tax that is going to be put on ammunition. And I thought, oh, my gosh, this is just like King George when he was trying to get all the gunpowder.
Exactly. It's all the same. It's just different, you know, more modernized weaponry today, but it's all the same. And you know, when we're talking about gun rights, it's just always good to say that the gun rights, they say, well, you know, back then all they had were muskets and rifles. Well, that was the state of the art back then. So, yeah, that's all they had, but they had the same things that our Army has. So, I mean, they kept themselves up to speed, and so that's just what's happening today. So when people, I don't buy that argument that, well, you have a lot better equipment now than we had back then. Well, yeah, but so does everybody. so does everybody else.
Right.
So as you recall, Kim, the British re-entered Boston through Charleston Peninsula. As the sun had set and all was turning dark. Remember that, going back to that? They had fought all their way back. And so then the British commander, General Gage, who had stayed in Boston, sent out reinforcements to guard their retreat back into the city. But they came over the Charleston Peninsula. And so those rear guard troops established positions on high grounds on that peninsula, and those high grounds consisted of two hills called Bunker and Breed. So the British actually started digging and building defensive positions on those two hills on that night of 19 April 1775. And as you remember, too, the British losses were staggering that day. 275 British were killed, wounded, or missing. And that created a big stir back in London. These casualties shocked the British, and they responded by sending more reinforcements to America and specifically to Boston. So throughout May of 1775, the next month after April, over 4,000 British soldiers came into Boston. And then on 25 May, three new crackerjack British major generals came into Boston. Their names of those generals were General William Howe, General John Burgoyne, known as Gentleman Johnny, and Henry Clinton. And now there were approximately 10,000 British soldiers in this geographically small town of Boston. The tension was definitely mounting. And these generals, along with General Gage, who was the commander-in-chief of all British forces in North America, started planning how to break this siege of 20,000 American militia that had come to surround Boston and keep those British forces from going out into the surrounding area and creating havoc like they had on the 19th of April. And so in early June 75, the British generals and others started developing that plan, and they would first capture the prominent high grounds on Dorchester Heights Peninsula that lay to the south of Boston, and then capture the high grounds on the Charleston Peninsula next, which, as you know, was the north of Boston. And by placing British cannon on these elevated terrains, they would be able to dominate the surrounding areas and break the siege and win the Battle of Boston. And as we discussed in last month's presentation, the Patriots had good intelligence gathering capability in the surrounding areas. And on 13 June,
yeah, because didn't you say that it was possibly General Gage's wife?
General Gage's wife was one of those people, and there was some kind of good relationship between her and Dr. Warren, who was one of the leaders of all of the things that were going on for the Patriots in the town of in the area of Boston. He was also the president of the provincial legislature that had been set up since the intolerable acts had been imposed upon the American citizens in Massachusetts. And so the Massachusetts provincial Congress received word from the Committee of Safety in New Hampshire of the details of this British plan for Boston that they had discovered. And so they said, Boston was aware now, or the Patriots in Boston were aware that the British were planning to take both of those high masses, those high grounds that we had talked about, one in the Charleston Peninsula on the north and one in the south on the Dorchester Peninsula, called the Dorchester Heights. And so on 15 June.
So, and just a question on that, Ben.
Yeah,
would the British have to fight that? Did the Patriots currently hold those two high grounds? Would there be a fight for that, or what was that like?
Well, there was nobody holding those right now, but the British were inside this little confine of Boston. The only thing that they had for outside help was they had their British Navy out in the Boston Harbor. So the Americans completely contained and were in charge of the Dorchester Heights, and there was nobody on them. But in the Boston Charleston Peninsula, there was nobody there yet. And so on 15 June, the Massachusetts Committee of Safety directed General Artemus Ward, who was the American general in charge of the Patriot forces surrounding Boston at that time, he said to set up defenses on the Charleston Peninsula and specifically on Bunker Hill. And General Ward passed these orders on to General Putnam, Israel Putnam, who was in charge of the field forces. And so on the night of 16 June, William Prescott, now you remember his nephew was Samuel Prescott, who brought the warning orders all the way to Concord on the 18th. And so they are connected, they are related. And so William Prescott led about 1,200 men onto the peninsula that night in order to set up positions from which artillery fire could be directed into Boston. And the force was made up of men from regiments of Colonel Prescott and General Putnam and others. At first, Putnam, Prescott, and their engineer, Richard Gridley, disagreed as to how they should where they should locate their defenses. Some work was performed on Bunker Hill, but Breed's Hill was closer to Boston and viewed as a much better defensive position. So arguably against orders, they decided to build their primary defenses there on Breed's Hill. Prescott and his men, using Gridley's outline, began digging a square fortification, which in the military terms is called a redoubt. And it's like 130 feet on each side with ditches and earthen walls. And the walls of the redoubt were about 6 feet tall. And there was a wooden platform placed inside on which the men could stand and fire over the walls. Because, you know, most people back then weren't 6 feet tall. So,
Ben, yes. Let's stop right there, and because we've got Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management on the line, and I know that he loves this history. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, I know this is one of your favorite shows when we have Ben Martin on.
Yeah, I'm waiting to hear about the Battle of Blueberry Hill with General Fats Domino. Is he going to talk about that today or no?
I think that'll be next month.
that's for sure. That's what I thought as well. So, hey, Jason, before we go to break and get back with Ben Martin, you are a senior VP with Presidential Wealth Management, helping people with their own economic well-being. The markets have been at such highs that and I'm not giving any advice, but I've been in the investment business for many years, and it seems like sometimes it's great to maybe assess when the markets are high. It's always smart to sell when it's high. And so what's your thoughts about that, Jason?
Well, Kim, you know, it's always hard to know exactly when the top is until after it's happened.
Right.
So sell high doesn't always mean that you're going to hit the exact top. You might take a little bit off the table as the elevator gets up to higher floors. And again, you can't expect to get the exact top unless you get very, very lucky. But I tend to think the markets are somewhat high and there's some risk out there. I don't think it's a bad idea to think about taking some gains off the table or looking at different types of investments that may, offer some protection on the downside and still give you a chance to participate in at least part of the market upside if it does keep going up. Because eventually, Kim, I do believe we will get, the air's going to come out of the balloon. And my feeling is I don't know what the catalyst is going to be to start it off. But my feeling is when it happens, it may be pretty ugly and it might be a severe correction.
Well, and I think that's why it would be important for people to sit down with you and do an assessment and also kind of a risk tolerance. How does your tummy feel when you see the markets go down? How can people reach you, Jason McBride?
Best way is just to give us a call, Kim, 303-694-1600. That's 303-694-1600.
Jason McBride, thank you so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good one, Kim.
And we'll be right back with Ben Martin.
Controlling your own destiny. There are a lot of unknowns on the horizon with the new administration. Predovich & Company is here to help. Trusted professionals for all your bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting needs. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. They've been helping her for years. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company works with clients from anywhere in the United States. Give them a call at 303-791-3000 to put Predovich & Company to work for you. Call 303-791-3000 today.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to each and every one of you who are contributing to support our independent voice. We've got to keep our freedom of speech, our freedom of thought, freedom of assembly. All those things are very, very important because they were fought for by the patriots who declared our independence from King George and the most powerful nation on the face of the earth at that time, the British Empire. And that is why we do this show. It's brought to you by the Harris family. And Ben Martin is our guest. He is a patriotic historian, a former Army Ranger, and also a West Point graduate, and really brings our history alive. Ben Martin, let's continue on. I'm on the edge of my seat regarding the fortification that they're building at Breed's Hill. So take it from there.
Okay, so good, Kim. So they were doing this all at night. They got out there, early in the morning, a little bit after midnight, they got out there so they could start working. And they were working really hard, and they had 1,200 men out there. And they were digging what we call a redoubt. It's a fortification. It's kind of a square fortification made out of earth and wood and things like that, just what's out there available, no concrete and things like that. And so they were working all night, and for the most part, until early in the morning, like around 4 o'clock, nobody even knew they were out there. But once they found out that they were out there, once the British found out that the Americans were out there, they started firing cannons from the ships onto them. Well, this woke up the big generals, and it woke up the admiral, and they went, what the heck is going on out here? Stop all this firing. Stop firing these cannon. And so then one of the generals, one of the three hot shot generals that had come in from the British was up, and he was up at that time doing a night reconnaissance. He didn't get much sleep. He is a pretty professional general. And so he said, hey, this stuff going on. So he woke up the other generals and he said, hey, you guys, they're out there building. I mean, they're building fortifications, and we need to wake up right now and start planning an attack so that we can attack first thing in the morning while they're still not settled. And the other generals went, go to bed. We'll take care of it in the morning. Don't worry about it. So when the morning came and the sunlight shined up, they said, look at what they've done out there. They've done so much work. And that's one of the things that Howe said three or four times in his life fighting the Patriots. He said, they do more work in one night than I can get my whole army to do in a whole month. And they just were working really hard, and they had everything prepared except a little bit of things that they had to continue doing. So in the morning when the light shined, then all of a sudden General Gage said, oh, man, look what they've done. And he said, look, everybody start firing the cannons at these guys. And so they did. They started, firing. There were 128 cannon in the British harbor in the Boston Harbor that belonged to the British. And so they just started firing. But they had already had all the breastwork, everything done, and so they were in good shape. The fires didn't really bother them too much. And so Howe said, well, okay, I'm going to start, because Howe was he was the senior ranking of the three generals that had come over. And, he's connected to his brother, who was Richard Howe, who was an admiral, and he was the head of the British Navy at the time. And so he was pretty well connected. And so he said, look, I'll take over. I'll do this. I'll lead an attack against them. He said, this is just the patriots out there, He says, they're a bunch of rebels. They don't know what they're doing. They're not professional. He says, I'll just lead a force right directly at them. And he says, we'll scare them out of their trenches, and then they'll take off. So you know, he says, okay, I want to get this going. So it takes him 6 hours to get his people organized and to get ready for the troops to conduct it. And so at 1400 hours, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Hal lands his forces on the extreme east end of the peninsula, and then he looks out there and he sees all these people on Breed's Hill, and then he looks behind and he sees all these Patriots on Bunker Hill. And he says, oh, I need more reinforcements. So he calls for more reinforcements, takes another hour to get the reinforcements there, and then he starts the attack. So Hal says, okay, I'm going to feint. I'm going to pretend I'm going to have my major attack is going to be a frontal assault, but really I'm going to send my troops, or I'm going to send a lot of my troops around their left flank, my right side, and he says, and I'll burst through there, I'll penetrate, and then I'll come back and attack them from the rear. So he does that. You know, he gets there and he gets them moving, his troops moving, marching towards that big readout in the front, and he sends these other folks around. Little does he know that Colonel John Stark, you know, the guy from New Hampshire who coined the phrase live free or die, he is the leader of all of those militia that have come from Connecticut in New Hampshire. So they've got a combined force. And so he's out on that left flank, and he's not about to let them get through. So he's fighting like crazy. And they just destroy this first assault. They just destroy the British. They're just not aware of what's going to happen. They let the British get really, really close to them. They're protected in their readout, and then they start firing. And it just withers away Howe's forces. And so he's out there leading them, though. You got to give him credit for his courage. And so he takes them back, and they get reorganized to start their second assault. And this time he says, okay, I'm going to pretend that I'm going around the left flank, their left flank again. And he said, this time I'm going to have a major attack going straight at them in their readout. And so this is a second assault, so he does the same, almost the same thing again, but he waits the attack differently. And this time it's just even worse. I mean, they're just destroyed. The British reporters that were there said many of their units lost between 3/4 and 9/10 of their men. Some of their companies were down to 8 or 9 men left in the company. And again, they had to withdraw. So, I mean, there was some really withering fires coming from the Patriots. So the British come with their third attack, and they give up the feint, really, from the going around the flank, and then they concentrate most all of their forces directly on the Patriot readout. And they said, this time we're just going to break through. And the results of this third attack would have even been more disastrous to the British had the Patriots not run out of ammunition. And once that happened, the British forces started climbing over the walls into the redoubt, where they began close hand-to-hand combat, and they had their bayonets. And, of course, the British did not have bayonets, and so they were to
make disadvantage. Oh, no, the Patriots didn't have – the Patriots did not have bayonets.
Yeah, did I say it wrong?
You said the British.
I'm sorry, I'm talking too fast. Yeah, the British had the bayonets, and the Patriots didn't, so they were at a very distinct advantage. So this began a very controlled retreat back to Bunker Hill and off the peninsula. And General Putnam's forces on Bunker Hill and Colonel Stark's forces on the left flank helped to cover the forces from the redoubt as they started their retreat. Even so, most of the Patriot casualties occurred during this retreat. And at the end of the battle, the British had won the field, but it was a pyrrhic victory for them. Of the 2,400
troops. And explain what you just said, that victory. What kind of a victory was that?
It's a pyrrhic victory, means they win the victory, but they have so many losses that it's really not a good victory. I mean, they can't suffer those things over and over again. So the 2,400 troops that were committed to the fight on the British side, they had 1,054 casualties, almost half of their forces. 226 were dead, 828 were wounded. and with a disproportionate number of these being British officers. And this will turn out to be, for the British, the highest casualty count they suffered in any single battle during the entire war. Wow. The British casualties were, I mean, the Patriots casualties were only 405. And this was one of the biggest losses to the Patriots was Dr. Joseph Warren, who we talked about before, who was the president of their Congress, and he was also the leader of the rebel Patriots in the Boston area. And that was really a tough loss for us. And as we said, he was the biggest gatherer of intelligence, military intelligence. And so because of this devastating British victory, and I say that, that's kind of an oxymoron or oxymoron, as some people call it. Yeah. General Gage was relieved of his duties in October of 1775 and called back to London, and he was replaced by General Howe. So back in Philadelphia now, the Continental Congress unanimously agreed to offer on 15 June 1775 George Washington his appointment as the Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army. And on 16 June 1775, the next day, General Washington accepted that unanimous appointment as sink of the Continental Army. He will arrive in Boston to take charge of his army on 2 July 1775. When he arrives in Boston, he will find an army in much disarray. He will spend much of his time evaluating his officers and training his troops, and he will change the objective in Boston. Instead of the main effort of the army, the Patriot Army, hitherto being to keep the British bottle up in Boston, his aim is to defeat them and drive them out of Boston. So, whoa, we got a big change coming on here with the
Commander-in-Chief. Let's keep that as a cliffhanger. Let's keep that as a cliffhanger, Ben. Let's go to break. And when we come back, we'll continue. I'm sitting on the edge of my seat for sure. And I want to say thank you to the Harris family for bringing this show to you regarding our history, the American Revolutionary War. Another great sponsor of the show is Castlegate Knife and Tool. They are a family-owned business located in Sedalia, Colorado. And whether or not you are a collector or a chef or a sportsman, military personnel, a first responder, Castlegate Knife and Tool is the right place for you to get that tool that makes everything work smoother, easier, and more successful. And all military personnel, veterans, and first responders get 10% off at Castlegate Knife and Tool every day, all day long. So go to castlegate.com for more information. That's castlegate.com. We will be right back with Ben Martin.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Thank you to each and every one of you who contribute to help support the show, keeping our independent voice out there on the airwaves. And thank you to all of the great sponsors that I get to work with as well. And this show is brought to you by the Harris family. Our guest is Ben Martin. He is a patriotic historian, a former Army Ranger, graduate from West Point, loves our American history, brings it alive. And I'm sitting on the edge of my seat to find out what happens next here with George Washington arriving in Boston. Ben, take it from there.
Okay, so Kim, like I said, when we stopped last month, it was the 19th of April, and it was the end of the battles of Lexington and Concord, and they were coming back. And 19 April was also the start of the siege of Boston, and so that's when all the militia from the colonial militia from the surrounding areas surround the city of Boston. One of those people that come in is a name that everybody knows but don't know so much about him, and that's Benedict Arnold. And at the time, he's the captain in the Connecticut militia, and he arrives with his troops to support the siege. And he was informed he informed the Massachusetts Committee of Safety that cannons and other valuable military stores are located at the lightly defended Fort Ticonderoga in New York, and he proposes its capture. So on 3 May, the committee gave Arnold a colonel's commission and authorized, so they made him a colonel and authorized him to raise troops and lead a mission to capture the fort and take all the weapons out of there. So he linked up with Ethan Allen and the Green Mountain Boys, along with the militia forces from Connecticut and Western Massachusetts, and they captured the fort and all of its armaments on the 10th of May of 1775. So he shows up in April, tells them and gives them the big lesson about, you know, all these military arms can be ours, and they give him permission. They make him a colonel, and they say, get out there and get him. And so by 10 May, he's made it all the way up there. It's about 150 miles one way up there with his troops, and he takes over the fort, gets all in, and he captures all the weapons there. But he doesn't have the capability to bring them back. So after George Washington took command of the army outside Boston in July, the idea of bringing the cannons from Ticonderoga to right there in Boston was raised, you know, by 25-year-old Colonel Henry Knox. Now, Henry Knox, before this time, had never been in the military, but he had read a lot of books because he was a bookseller in Boston. And so he had read a lot of military books, and he had all the book knowledge to be a great military leader, but he had just never applied any of that. And many of Washington's advisors say, hey, George, or General Washington, or Your Highness, Your Excellency, do not take this plan. He said, this is hopeless. The guns would have to be dismantled and loaded onto barges, transported down Lake George before the 30-mile-long lake froze, then hauled the rest of the way by sled and oxen over rough trails. Knox would need good luck and better weather, warm days for crossing the lake, and cold, snowy nights for the sleds.
Oh, okay. Now, I need a clarification on this. So
yeah.
Benedict Arnold captures the fort on May 10th, but now you're saying it's bad weather. So has it taken this much time to try to come up with a plan?
No, they have the plan, but everybody was afraid that it just wouldn't work to get those guns down. But Knox says, hey, I can do this. But all of Washington's advisors say, no, he can't. Don't even try this. But Knox impresses Washington with his energy, his ingenuity, his determination, his knowledge of artillery. And now, as the winter deepens, Washington faces a predicament. You know, his ragtag troops are there in Boston, and they have the British under siege, and they've occupied the high grounds from which they could shell the British, but the Americans need big guns to do that. And Knox has an idea about how to get them there. So they finally give them permission to go do this. And so Knox has to mobilize a large corps of men. He has to build flotilla of flat-bottom boats for the lake trip, and then he has to build 40 special sleds, gather 80 yoke of oxen to pull the 5,000-pound sleds, and that's really hard to do.
Yeah.
So they said, no, he's not going to be able to do it. But Washington agreed to the idea, and on 1 December, that Boston bookseller sets off on horseback to Ticonderoga. He arrives there. He immediately sets about disassembling the guns. He has to disassemble all the guns. And so they have 43 heavy cannon. They have 6 coehorns, which is a small bronze mortar, like a cannon, but it can be transported around by 2 men. But it's, you know, and so then they have 8 mortars and 2 howitzers. So all in all, it's 59 guns. And now by 9 December, he's up there. All the guns are loaded onto these flat bottom boats and headed down the lake. And until that point, the weather has remained mild, but now the winds pick up and Knox's men are freezing on there, but they continue to row into this icy gale. And with heroic efforts, they get to the end of the lake just as it's beginning to freeze over. So the next challenge is to move the cannon over land, and he does that too. He gets a local farmer to purchase and make these 40 strong sleds, and then to get the 80 yoke of oxen that he needs, he procures them. And so here he goes. And he says, in less than a week, the determined Knox has acquired the sleds and loaded the cannon. And on 17 December, he wrote to Washington, I have everything ready. I'm ready to go. And he says, I will get fresh oxen when I get to Springfield, Massachusetts, and I'll carry them into your camp. And I hope to be there in 16 or 17 days with, this is a quote, a noble train of artillery for His Excellency, you, George Washington. So Knox is all ready, but he cannot move because, you know, he beat the cold weather out of the lake, but now the ground is bare. There's been no snow, and he needs a good base of snow for the oxen to be able to drag those heavy sleds. For finally, on Christmas morning, 25 December, he wakes up, and there's several feet of fresh snow on the ground. But now he has to cut a new path through this deep snow, and we've all had that occasion here lately to know that's pretty hard to do. And so on 5 January, the artillery, he keeps pushing on, though. Knox is really good, and he's very industrious, and he's very resourceful. And so he went on, and he just kept pushing. And then he's on the evening of 8 January, he writes in his diary, he said, I went on the ice about 8 o'clock, because now he's in Albany, and he's trying to get over the Hudson River with these, and he needs to have a really good freeze. And so he says he went on the ice this morning at 8 o'clock. He's been held up by the weather, and he says, I proceed carefully over, and he says, I get these sleds, and he said, I get going, and he says, everything's going good, and he said, the good people of Albany helped me a lot. And then he continues eastward. He finally, and he gets a 80 yoke of new fresh oxen, and so he arrives in the city or in Cambridge, you know, around Boston on 24 January 1776. Everybody said he couldn't do it. 6 weeks later, on the night of 4 March, Washington's gun batteries in Cambridge are distracted. They distract the British while several thousand Americans quietly maneuver the artillery up Dorchester Heights and frantically construct emplacements, gun emplacements. And they even have logs painted to look like cannon to see that they have more power than firepower than they really do. So this is amazing. So he gets all these heavy cannon from Ticonderoga, and as a diversion, he has these batteries set up in Cambridge, and he starts firing volleys into the city every night. So it starts on 2 March 1776, and then the British return the fire, so it makes it even better. And so on the night of 3 March, while preparations for taking the heights, the British don't even know what's going on, but the Americans are planning and organizing like crazy. On the night of 4 March, the batteries open fire again, but this time the fire was accompanied by action. So those cannonade then start on 4 March, and they continued for 3 successive nights. And while the British were focused on this, the Americans were getting those weapons up the hill. The American objective was to get cannon onto Dorchester Heights and fortify the positions. However, again, the weather wasn't cooperating with them, and the ground was frozen, so digging was impossible. Putnam was a colonel, and he was in charge of this operation, and so he was a millwright, and so he devised a plan using these heavy timbers. He made these things called chandeliers, which are just frames, and he filled them with fascines, which are rolled sticks that are tied together, and they help to make the breastworks around the guns. And so they work like crazy. They get 2,500 troops, and General John Thomas then becomes in charge of this. They quietly march to the top, hauling the tools and the prefabricated fortifications and the cannon placements. And they muffle their wagon wheels with straw and rags and move through the night just like they will do when they get to Trenton and Princeton in a couple of months here. Well, not even a couple of months, but even a little bit longer than that. But so he uses the same strategy to evade the British under General Cornwallis later at the Battle of Trenton and Princeton. And so then he has hay bales placed between the paths taken by the troops. So he stacks these big hay bales, on the enemy side of where the troops are going up the hill to muffle the sounds and the activities. And throughout the night, these troops in their relief labored hauling all of these cannon up. And so on 5 March, which was the 6th, and Washington is there with them to provide moral support and encouragement as they're doing all this hard work. And so on the night of the 5th of March, he reminds everybody that this is the 6th anniversary of the Boston Massacre. And by 400 hours in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, they had their construction fortifications that were protecting them against small arms and grapeshot, which is what they needed to do. And the work continued on these positions. The troops were cutting down trees and constructing abattis to impede any British assaults on the works. And the outside of the works also included rock-filled barrels, because they couldn't dig. They brought barrels up and they filled them with rocks, so that would also give them protection against enemy fire. But those rock-filled barrels could also be rolled down the hill at attacking troops.
We're just about out of time. And so what happened? Okay. Hal woke up and what happened?
So Hal woke up on the 5th March, and again, he said, these rebels have done more work in one night than my whole army has done in a month. And what happened was, by the 17th, they had an agreement. Hal said, if you promise to let me leave here without firing those guns at me and take my troops with me, he says, I will not burn Boston to the ground. And so they have a gentleman's agreement, and they leave on the 17th of March, which is evacuation day for Boston. And it's also, as you know, St. Paddy's Day, so they still celebrate that till today. And it's just an amazing story what happened.
Oh, Ben Martin, it is. We are out of time. I'm on the edge of my seat for next month. Thank you so much, Ben Martin, for this show that's brought to you by the Harris family.
Yes, sir. Thank you. You're very welcome.
And our quote is from Henry Knox today. It says, every friend to the liberty of his country is bound to reflect and step forward to prevent the dreadful consequences which shall result from a government of events. My friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.